I'd like to greet you in Christ's name this morning. It is good to be back again. And welcome to you visitors. We're glad you're here with us. I guess I need to catch up on my thank yous first of all. Thank y'all very much for the love offering y'all took for us a couple weeks ago. It's very kind of y'all. And it shows that y'all care. Thank you for that. And thank y'all for your prayers for last weekend. It was good for me to go to Florida and be with the church down there. And the trip down was great. The time there was great, but coming home was not so great. And I had many messages from y'all saying you were praying for us. I had, just the fact that y'all cared enough to message me and see how it was going. And I had gifts given to me. A dear brother gave me a gift of money before I left. Wouldn't have had to do it, but he did. Standing in line there at the Atlanta airport, I had a brother offer to buy me an airline ticket on another airline, if that's what it took. He offered to rent me a car. Just everything, all of that, that just shows y'all care. Thank y'all for that. I don't know why God let that trip go the way it did. Standing in line for 6.5 hours with a 5-year-old is not anybody's idea of fun. But you know what it did do is it gave me an appreciation for there's people standing in lines in Mexico. There's people standing in lines probably in Ukraine trying to get into Romania. All those people standing in line for days, and I whine about several hours. I thought about those people. And some of those people have war in their background and no home to return to. I had a home to come to. I'm very blessed. And then I had Ernie and Wilma come get me. I always admired and appreciated Ernie, but it was probably one of the first times in my life it wasn't hard for me to imagine a halo over his head. He was like my rescuing angel, him and Wilma both. And I know it was a sacrifice on their part. They drove to the sunny side of Atlanta to be on the right side of Atlanta to make the trip home the next day, and they turned around and drove back into Atlanta traffic to the airport to pick us up. And that's no small feat, and it was very kind of them. We're going to be reading out of Luke 10 this morning. I have a very simple, very basic message for y'all that has probably been preached maybe more than any other message in the Bible. I titled it Love Like Jesus. So why is love a struggle sometimes for me? Maybe it's not a struggle for you, but sometimes love is not the easiest thing, is it? Sometimes it's due to radical differences in belief or lifestyle. But a lot of times love, where it's the hardest, is the very people we live amongst, is it not? The very people we call brothers and sisters. Sometimes I see the way the political world's going, and it's pretty pathetic, really. The fact that you almost can't have a debate anymore. There's so much hate on both sides that you about can't talk to each other, it seems like. And sometimes I wonder if that attitude seeped a little bit into my life, or maybe into our circles here. Back in the old days, old political days, debates were common, and it was expected to get together and debate. It was expected to get together and talk about each other's differences. Now it seems all people can do is trash one side or the other. And sometimes it seems like we Christians can be accused of that also. The old saying of, And going through this message, I am not at all trying to say we should be easy on sin. I'm not trying to say we don't condemn sin. I'm not saying we don't point out sin. But the old saying of love the sinner and hate the sin, do I understand that? Because a lot of times I want to connect the two. I want to dislike the sinner also. I see maybe a lifestyle that I know is against scriptural teaching. And sometimes if I'm not very careful, I start disliking the sinner as much as I dislike the sin. That shaky ground, that's not ground Jesus wanted us to stand on. Let's read Luke 10. That story that we all know so well, don't we? That story that maybe to some of y'all will be boring, but I beg you, just listen to this old story again. Let's read in Luke 10, verse 25. And behold, a certain lawyer stood up and tempted him, saying, Master, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? And he said unto him, What is written in the law? How readest thou? And he answering said, Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy strength, and with all thy mind, and thy neighbor as thyself. And he said unto him, Thou hast answered right, this do, and thou shalt live. But he, willing to justify himself, said unto Jesus, And who is my neighbor? And Jesus answering said, A certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and fell among thieves, which stripped him of his raiment, and wounded him and departed, leaving him half dead. And by chance there came a certain priest that way, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. And likewise a Levite, when he was at that place, came and looked on him and passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion on him, and went to him, bound up his wounds, pouring in oil and wine, set him on his own beast, and brought him to an inn, and took care of him. And on the morrow, when he was departed, he took out 2 pence, and gave them to the host, and said unto him, Take care of him, and whatsoever thou spendest more, when I come, I will repay thee. Which now of these three thinkest thou was neighbor unto him that fell among the thieves? And he said, He that showed mercy on him. And Jesus said, Go and do thou likewise. So we have this lawyer in verse 25, probably a very well-educated man, probably a man who was very persuasive in his speech and knew how to make a good argument. He's probably an upper-class man, and you could tell that either by the way he was dressed or the way he handled himself. And he asked a good question, and he addressed Jesus with respect. So far, he was doing everything right. Verse 26, he, in typical fashion to the question, Jesus responded with another question. And this man got it right again. Verse 27, he nailed it. He knew what the answer to the question was, did he not? Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy strength, all thy mind, and thy neighbor as thyself. He passed the test. And if this lawyer would have been a wise man, he could have walked off at this point and looked like a genius. But isn't it funny how sometimes when we're guilty of something, when I'm guilty of something, and I want to justify myself or my actions or my former actions, I just keep on talking and I get myself into a hole. It's kind of human nature, is it not? We dig the bottom of the hole out just a little bit deeper, and you would think as a lawyer, he would have known better than that. You would have thought. But verse 29, he wasn't done. He wanted to justify himself. Makes me wonder just a little bit if maybe there was an incident that happened in this man's life that he couldn't quite scratch out of his memory. Maybe he had that little nag on his conscience yet from something that happened way back when where he failed this test. I don't know. That's just surmising. But he willing to justify himself, said to Jesus, Who is my neighbor? And in typical Jesus fashion, he proceeded to tell a story to make a point. Verse 30, a man was going from Jerusalem to Jericho. It wasn't that far away from my understanding of things, as far as distance-wise. It's approximately 20 miles, people think. But it had about a 3,700-foot drop in elevation to get there, so the road was steep. And y'all know what steep roads are like, especially in western Arkansas if you go over there much. They're curvy and they're narrow and they're tight. Likely, if somebody was making this trip, they either had business to attend to or some pretty big need on the other end. You didn't just make this trip because you wanted to go on a little country morning stroll. This was a trip you made out of necessity. And this traveler friend of ours should have probably known better than to go alone. But likely he made the trip before and it was all right, so why not go again? There was nobody to go with, so let's go. Unlucky for him and lucky for the thieves, he got caught and his bravery for traveling alone got undeserved punishment. This was one of those things that just happened if you made this trip back then. It wasn't an unusual thing for things like this to happen. It wasn't an untypical headline in the newspapers. Things like this happened. And now we have the poor man in the ditch, and he just has the clatter of hooves in his ears that are running the opposite direction, and they're getting fainter and fainter. And his chances are pretty slim. They're pretty slim. He's about to be a statistic in the Jewish record books of why you don't make this trip. Parents could point to this man and tell their children, this is why you don't make that trip alone. So can you imagine with me just for a minute that he's laying there, he's fully expecting to die, and he hears footsteps coming back, and if I'm in his shoes, I'm probably thinking the robbers are coming back to finish me off. Or whatever. Maybe they don't need any witnesses in court against me and they thought they better come back and make sure they did the job right. And you take a peek at who's coming, and of all your luck in the world, if you could have had chose anybody to come along and rescue you, you would have probably picked a priest, right? And he just about can't imagine his good luck when he sees a priest coming. A man who he had maybe seen at the temple, a man who is known to be a man of God, a man who maybe had preached a sermon that morning that this man had listened to. Everybody knows that this is the type of man you can trust. And at this very moment of time in his greatest need, this is who showed up, is this priest. What a stroke of luck on his part. And can you imagine his disappointment when his hopes get dashed? And this individual he thought he could trust, he knew he could trust, he could have picked this man to help him, is walking off. The story didn't end there, did it? I had to wonder how many stories like that maybe actually happened and they ended right there. But that's not how this story ended. This poor man got another chance and another disappointment. He hears footsteps again and he has another chance. He has another chance. And he looks and it's another religious man, a Levite. Another man that's supposed to be a helper of all people down on their luck. Another man he would have chosen to help him. A man from a good tribe that was known to take care of people. This is who was coming the second time. So you get a priest and a Levite, some of the two most loved people in the Israelite. I mean, they were God's people, the priest and the Levite. And this Levite treated him in the exact same way the priest did, except for the fact that he at least came and looked on him. But that was as far as he took it. And then he passed by on the other side. He joined the priest in the category of I'm too busy and he looks too dirty. I had to think that these priests and this priest and this Levite would have probably been if on a crowded city street, they very likely would have been the very first ones to call the ambulance. They maybe would have even tried to be doing CPR on the man and get him, bring him back. They would have probably made a real show on a city street in a crowd. But out in the middle of nowhere where nobody's watching, they failed. They failed. These people knew the law. They taught the law. Just for Deuteronomy 22, 1 through 4, you don't have to turn there, but you can if you want to. Just to show you, this is who these people were. This is who God taught this priest and Levite to be. Thou shalt not see thy brother's ox or his sheep go astray and hide thyself from him. Thou shalt in any case bring them again unto thy brother. And if thy brother be not nigh unto thee, or if you know him not, then shall you bring it unto thy house, and it shall be with thee until thy brothers seek after it, and thou shalt restore it to him again. In like manner thou shalt do with his ass, and so shalt thou do with his raiment, and with all lost things of thy brothers, which he hath lost, and which thou hast found, shalt thou do likewise, that thou mayest not hide thyself. Thou shalt not see thy brother's ass or his ox fall down by the way and hide thyself from them, and thou shalt surely help him to lift them up again. That is just four verses of what these people, how they were supposed to treat each other. And you had teachers of this kind of law walking off on this wounded man. Maybe they didn't want to touch a corpse because they didn't want to go through a week of ceremonial cleaning. I don't know. But either way, they should have, they failed the test that God had for them that day. So let's talk about the Samaritans a little bit. This Samaritan. Isn't it interesting that in this world famous story, we don't even have his name. We don't even know what the man's name was. All we know is he was a Samaritan. And what do we know about the Samaritans? This hurt man was obviously, from the way Jesus was saying it, a Jew. And we know that the Jews despised the Samaritans. I don't know if the Samaritans hated the Jews as much as the Jews hated them. Probably they did. It probably went both ways. But the Jews thought less of this people group than just about any other people group on the planet. So who were these people and how did they become who they were? So King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon was conquering the Middle East. And it was at a time when Israel was failing. And he went in and he moved a lot of the Jewish people out of Judea. All he did was leave the old and the sick there. And then he took other people groups and he moved them in amongst these people. And they kind of gathered together for survival purposes. And there ended up being a lot of intermarriage over the years. And in the course of time, they ended up in the country of Samaria. The Jews returned 70 years later to rebuild the temple, and the Samaritans showed up to help build Jerusalem. The Jews ran them off and said, no, y'all ain't helping us because y'all are half-breeds. Y'all intermarried with these people that King Nebuchadnezzar moved in. We're not having nothing to do with y'all. And that's where the feud grew. And the feud grew from there until the time of Christ that the Jews hated these Samaritans so much they would barely even travel through their country. They would do about anything to avoid even stepping foot on these people's land. They were their brothers from years ago. They were half Jewish, but the Jews would have nothing to do with them. Another pain point was that the Samaritans worshipped in Mount Gerizim. I think that's how you pronounce it. I think they still have their temple there, if I understand it right. And all the argument of where to worship God, at this mount or in Jerusalem, there was a lot of argument between the two. This Mount Gerizim was the Samaritan's holy mountain. It's one of the places where they, I think there's, is it Mount Moriah and this mount? I think it was those two that, of where possibility of Abraham offering up Isaac. It was one of those, I don't know if they know for certain which mountain it was, but the Samaritans would argue it was that mountain. You remember the woman at the well in John 4:9, and then in 4:20, also in that chapter, she was bringing up about where their fathers were worshiping to Jesus. All these old feuds, all these years long of at each other, not liking each other, not getting along. So here we have this Samaritan coming along with this long track record of Jewish dislike, Jewish hate. So can you imagine, back to our poor wounded friend in the ditch, he's had two chances and they've both been dashed, and he hears footsteps again, and he opens his eyes to see a Samaritan, and he probably knows he's a Samaritan immediately just from the way the man's dressed. And he would almost rather nobody would come, because he knows this man isn't going to help. He knows this man is no good. He knows if, I don't know what the relationship was like. I don't know if a lone Samaritan would kill a wounded Jew that was helpless. I know the relationships were really bad, but I don't know if they were that bad or not. But for all he knew, this Samaritan maybe would finish him off just for the fun of it. At any rate, he knew he wasn't going to help. And can you imagine his disbelief when kind words are spoken? Let's look at what this man started out doing. He did five things right away. Number one, he cared enough to go over to him. Number two, he cared enough to bind up his wounds, put in disinfectant, and put on salve. He cared enough to give up his own ride, and he himself walked. He cared enough to take him to an inn. And then he not only took him to an inn, he stayed with him all night. He probably didn't get much sleep that night. Probably not. He was probably up a lot that night taking care of this man. And this was a complete stranger. Sometimes I complain when my boys get me up out of bed in the middle of the night. And I love my boys. But this man was a complete stranger, and he was willing to stay up all night with him. In verse 35, the man did have to move on. He did have to depart the next day. But look what he did. He was willing to put his money and trust on the line with the innkeeper, and willing to pay him more when he came back if it took more. What a man. So this poor lawyer here was in a pickle, and he knew it, did he not? He knew it. He probably wished he'd have walked off way back at verse 28. And he had to answer a hard question, did he not? Jesus asked him who he thought was the neighbor in this situation. And I'm still a little astounded at the man's answer. He said, "He that showed mercy on him," which was right, but he still couldn't bear to say the name Samaritan. He still couldn't bear to say that name. He had to say, "He that showed mercy on him." Hate's a hard thing to get rid of, is it not? Even after a story like this, he couldn't say it. the point I want to make here is, y'all have heard this saying before. Actions speak louder than words. Every time, don't they? Who knows? Maybe the priest and the Levite told the Samaritan or the man in the ditch that they would pray for him. I don't know. Maybe they did. But if they did, it didn't really do him any good, did it? At least it didn't change their actions. It was the Samaritan who was willing to give up his time and his money and get dirty. Actions speak louder than words. If I have a neighbor, and they say they love you, and they can't get done telling you how much they love you, and yet you see them, and they chase your cat around the yard, and they throw trash in your yard, and they play loud music all hours of the night, do you really think that person loves you? Well, we kind of have our doubts, don't we? But yet, suppose we have another neighbor that, you know, they don't really care so much for Christians, and they kind of say it more or less, but they're respectful. And if you go on a trip, they get your mail and they put it in the garage. And if they see your trash sitting in there, they take it out so the trash man can get it. Who do we believe? We believe the man that has the correct actions, right? You know, that actually, I don't have neighbors that, I think all my neighbors would be professing Christians, but I had a neighbor man that I highly respect next door to me, and he was, we were on a trip one time, and he was putting my mail in the garage for me, and trash runs on Tuesday, and we'd left on Monday or something. I thought, well, the trash just won't get put out this week. And we came home from the trip, and the trash was gone. He was putting mail in the garage, and he knew what the trash route was. And he went in, and he got our trash, and he took it out in the bin on Tuesday morning, and he took care of our trash problem. I didn't want to ask him to do it because I didn't want to be a pain. Little things like that, actions speak louder than words. That tells me he actually had our best interest in mind. Point number two that I want to make is greedy people don't love others. Think back, there's times I make really silly decisions in my life. Stupid decisions, I can call them that. And a lot of times when I look back at them, I did it and I was in either two scenarios. I made a decision in fear, or I made a decision in greed. And if you make a decision with any of those influences, it's not usually a very good decision. At least it's not in my life. And fear and greed come from two different places. But greed, it's impossible to be greedy and have a love for others. It just is. And capitalism, I like capitalism. I think it's the right way to structure a country. Capitalism there's all kinds of inventions, and you compare a capitalist country with a communist country, there's much more productivity coming out of a capitalist country. But one of the downsides about capitalism, if we aren't very careful, we can let it turn to greed. We really can. And we've gotten pretty crafty at how we use our wording sometimes. We can structure our language so it don't look like greed. We're helping. However you want to structure it, don't let greed run over your life. Don't let it. Don't do it. If we can never take a loss for a customer or a stranger we just met, maybe we should check our motives. Maybe I need to check my motives. If I can't do anything for anybody without there being a little bit of profit or a little bit of good in it for me somewhere, maybe I need to check my life. Am I willing to lose a little money occasionally? Am I willing to help someone I may never see again? Another thing is, it's pretty easy to help somebody if you know that you might be getting something in return, is it not? It's pretty easy to cater to the upper class in society, because you know they have the means to help you out someday if you ever need it, right? The true test for me comes, can I help somebody when there's absolutely no chance that person can ever repay me? And am I willing to go ahead and do it? Think about it. I need to think about that sometimes. If I know they have absolutely no means of ever returning a favor, am I still willing to do it? Greed should never be part of a Christian's life. It'll make you make foolish decisions, and it's not what Christ wanted his followers to be. And I'm not saying that we need to, if you're taken advantage of once at a store, that you go back over and over and over again, all the time getting taken advantage of, just to prove that you're a Christian. No, that's not what I'm talking about. But are we willing to silently suffer a loss and not hold feelings, not hold a grudge? If I suffer loss from somebody and I meet that man in town later, can I look at him? Can I talk to him? Can I be his friend anyway? Can I not mention it? Can I not bring it up? TJ talked about love and service this morning in devotions. And he's right on. The Christian life is one of love and service. It is. And we talked about it in Sunday school class too. And it's not something that comes naturally for me. I don't know if it comes naturally for any human to just completely love somebody, completely be willing to be of service to them and not expect anything in return. The heart of God is mercy and knowledge. I found an interesting verse in Hosea 6:6. It says, "For I have desired mercy and not sacrifice, and the knowledge of God more than burnt offerings." I have desired mercy and not sacrifice. Mercy and love go hand in hand. The heart of God truly is a God of mercy and knowledge of Him. And if I can get that into my heart and let it change me, if you can get it in your heart and let it change you, we can be the unselfish people God wants us to be. We really can. With God's help. Can I look with love and mercy at the man in line behind me, even though he has tattoos and pink hair? We run into those people every now and then, don't we? And you know what? It's so hard for me to sometimes look at those people and say, what's your lifestyle is why you're at. You've made mistakes. You shouldn't do that to your body. Some people have so many piercings, they look like they fell in a tackle box. You know what I mean? And I say, that's your fault. Why would you do that to yourself? You know what? Some of that stuff people can help, but I have to remember, those people, maybe if it's a very tattooed man, and I find that a bit repulsive, but if that's who that man is, maybe he made decisions in his youth he regrets now, and you can't get rid of some of that stuff. And you know what? A lot of those people, it's society is more and more accepting of those things than they used to be, but it's still not really smiled upon in society. So everywhere that man goes, especially here in the Bible Belt, he's probably getting a little bit less than loving looks. Maybe he made a decision he regrets and now he can't change it, and we can be the ones to smile at him and talk to him anyway and be friendly. Maybe. In closing, y'all have all heard the comment, we don't love God any more than we love our worst enemy. And Jesus also said, by this shall all men know that you are my disciples if you have love one for another. That's the gauge, is it not? Do we have love one for another? Do we have love for the community out there? Do we care enough to ask about their lives? And then do we have love for each other in here? Do I actually care enough to love you enough to ask you about your life? Y'all humbled me by asking me how it's going on the trip home from Florida last weekend. Y'all cared enough to ask. And I learned from that, and I thank y'all for it. Can I be that man that, can we all be those people that love? And I'll tell you something else. It's impossible, I think, to go through your entire life and love people, love mankind without loving God. There's people that do for certain periods of time. They maybe say they do it, but true love for mankind, you're going to have a love for God at the very start. So start there, and then let God work in your life. Let it change you. Be willing to love others, no matter who they are. Don't love the sin, but love the sinner. All right, that's all I have. Let's kneel for prayer.